and it was just such a whimper. I can deal with losing, but losing that like that, and specifically to Arsenal, no, it definitely has taken a bit of the shine off the scene.
I think FIFA are in a difficult position in terms of punishment because they've had such a lax attitude to punishment for things that are far more serious crimes than wearing a poppy.
And the culture that he's currently instilled in that side is one where it's okay to lose.
I read something today that said Wolves have scored more goals against the Premier League top six than Man United have.
Hello everybody and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast. I'm your fantastic, yes fantastic host Jordan. Thank you for checking into the pod this week. Why are you laughing, Gabriel? I haven't told any jokes yet. Right, everyone's laughing now. It's like that. Okay. This week on the pod, I'm joined by our Chelsea fan, Gabriel. What do you say, G?
Oh, really good, man. Yeah, just been travelling with work for the last few weeks, so nice to be able to squeeze a pod in before I
get back. No pun intended.
But yeah, I'm good.
You're good. Nice one. I'm also joined by a Liverpool fan, Stephen. It's been a while, sir. How you doing?
Yes, thanks for having me back, George. Been too long.
It's been way too long.
Been too long.
Good summer?
Good to be back. Yeah, long summer. Long summer waiting for football to come back. So ready to go.
So happy days.
Revitalised.
Good to hear. And I'm also joined by Spurs fan Joel. Now, Joel, the last time I had you on my other radio show, you were talking... What are you laughing at?
It's Gabriel.
Ignore him.
I'm in a good mood. He's in a good mood. He's in a good mood. Fair play.
The last time we spoke on my other show, you were at the top of the summer and you were talking about how busy a summer you had in sport covering none other than the Athletics.
Yeah.
This summer. How's your summer been so far?
Mad. It's still going on. I've been busy chasing Mo Farah around that Alexandra Stadium all weekend. In his last ever track race, I wanted his vest. He wouldn't give it to me though.
Oh, pissed!
Such is life. But yeah, it's been mad. That Wimbledon, Athletics, Formula One. I see you about as well, mate.
That's a good summer.
That's a good summer, isn't it?
Good summer.
Could have been worse.
Can we start again so I can say master?
You've been travelling, Gabe. We've worked.
We've heard your summer. We're going to move on. Thank you very much for all the people that have sent in comments, questions, responses, and tweets and posts to the FFP. We'll be getting through as many of those as possible through this and the next few pods. And don't forget, you can subscribe to us via iTunes, and we have now an Instagram page. If you're on the gram, follow us, Football Fans Podcast. Going to try and build that up. Tag a friend, and we are also on Facebook as well. So if you want to keep up to date with all of our Facebook lives, which we'll be doing every couple of weeks, and also competitions, follow us on Facebook, Football Fans Podcast, and obviously Twitter as well, FFP_11. Right, gents, let's get into some quick drive-bys. You know the rules, 60 seconds, cannot be interrupted, and I will be moving on 59 seconds. Let's start with you, Stephen. Is Rafa Benitez playing the media and the fans against Mike Ashley?
Yeah, he probably is. He's done the same at every club he's been at, so it's no surprise if he's doing that at Newcastle now. He's probably just trying to squeeze an extra couple of pound out of Ashley. Ashley's done a big interview with Sky where he's basically acknowledged he's got to do better. So yeah, I'd imagine he's just playing the game, working it to his advantage. It writes off a couple of results that don't go his way early in the season, and hopefully he'll get a couple of players in before the end of summer and move on.
Do you sit on the fence of Rafa Benitez needs to just get on with the job, he's been well paid and he's not at Madrid anymore, work with the budget you've got, or the side of the fence that says you've got one of the best managers in the world, give him what he wants to succeed?
Well, look, we've been down this road with Newcastle a few times on the pod. It's a big club, you know, big fan base.
Yes, it is, Jordan.
Well, look, it's big fan base, you know, so why not try and push it? If, you know, what's their aims? What do they want to do? Do they want to win something, or do they just want to be a yo-yo club going up and down between Premier League and kind of the Championship? So if they want to progress, they want to do something, they've got one of the best managers in the world at the club, now's the time to put a bit of investment in and try and push the club on. So if they don't do it now, when are they going to do it?
Fair enough. Gabriel, have we seen over the weekend already why Marko Arnautović could be already seen as the worst buy of the season so far? He's already a 1 in 5 man, and he's petulant. He's going to get a couple of red cards for stupidness already.
Well, that 1 in 5 isn't really based on these stats. That's just on your assessment.
Yeah, okay. That's my opinion. Okay.
But yeah, I've never really convinced about. He just seems like the type of guy that if I'm in the dressing room, I wouldn't want to be around him, because he seems as if he feels like he's better than he is. And it works for kind of people like Zlatan or Cantona or someone with a really big stature, but what has he ever done? So no, I think it could be a disaster. I think in terms of harmony, I can see him and like Mark Noble clashing. You know, I can see him and Zabaleta clashing. When he got sent off, you know, Bilic didn't even look at him. I mean, he's kicking the bag as if he's, you know what I mean?
He's wrong.
So yeah, it's a risky signing, but he might pop up with the odd Porto goal as well. So you never know.
Joe, will De Boer's transition prove successful at Crystal Palace? And what I mean by transition is where they were under Allardyce to where they now want to be under De Boer. Will he get the time to implement that and keep his job in the meantime?
Well, they said they wanted a long-term manager, didn't they? So I'd assume that the answer to that in short is yes.
In the bottom four come November, December, do you think they'll panic and...
It depends on how much money they've given for resources and just looking at the bigger picture, because at the end of the day, he's got to turn around the culture down there. They're used to battling in a way that doesn't lend itself to a team who wants to progress up the league. It's more just staving off, you know what I mean, the threat of relegation. So if they show a little bit more ambition than that in the way that they play, that might filter through the whole club, you never know. They've got a good man to lead them in that respect, a man who knows how to do that. So I think it's a great fit. I think it's a great match. I think the two of them could work with each other, to be honest.
Just briefly, do you think he's got the players to implement the style that he wants to
Not
implement?
Yet. And you can't really get them all in one window. I don't know any club that could do that. So they've got to give him at least two seasons to pull it all together. Like I said, it'll all be about the bigger picture when we get to the business end of the season, and looking at where they are and, you know, how effective he's been. Who's still on his side? All of those things that will matter. But I think it's a good match. I think they'll be all right.
Okay. We're also going to be speaking to Darren Lewis of the Mirror later on in the pod, and also TalkSport presenter and Bournemouth fan Tom Latcham as well. So we're going to have a couple of more guests on the pod a bit later on. Okay, let's move on now, guys, to the big game of the weekend: London Derby between Spurs and Chelsea, which saw Spurs have their first game in the Premier League at their new home of Wembley. They're there for a year, as we know. I'll start with you, Stephen. Was this for Spurs an opportunity miss, considering the Chelsea team that came, or were they just a little bit unlucky?
I mean, opportunity missed, if you base it on how Chelsea played in the opening day of the season. I didn't think they were unlucky with what happened to them on Sunday, from what, you know, I watched the game, I wasn't at the game, but from watching at home, you know, Chelsea looked reasonably comfortable with what Spurs had to throw at them. And if anything, Chelsea probably had a couple more chances to be further ahead before the Spurs equaliser. So, yeah, opportunity missed on the basis of what we've seen from Chelsea on the opening day. But I've got a feeling worrying times for Spurs at home. You know, I've got a lot of Spurs mates, and they're worried about playing at Wembley. So, you know, it's a gay day at Wembley for everyone. You know, your Brightons, your West Bromwich Albions, them players might never get to play at Wembley in their career except this season. So, you know, Spurs 100% record at home last season, already gone on the opening day for them this year. So I don't know, things have probably got to change. I've seen a couple of people talking about the pitch feels bigger, doesn't suit the Spurs pressing game and whatnot. Time will tell over the course of the season. But yeah, I thought Chelsea were value for the win yesterday from what I've seen.
Joe, I asked Stephen if it was maybe an opportunity missed, only because all the talk leading into the season was Spurs at Wembley, they're going to struggle. They were great at White Hart Lane at home, but this season they're going to struggle. This could have been the game for Spurs to not only put the hoodoo of not being in Chelsea, or it's been a long time to be in Chelsea, whatever it is, but really bed in to your new ground, beating the champions, and say, listen, this is our new ground for a year. We've beaten the champions. We were weakened. Let's go. And it just felt to me like it was an opportunity missed for me in that regards. Do you agree, or do you feel that it's one of those games that the better team won?
Yeah, no, it's a London derby. I think it's a London derby. First game of the season at home against the champions. So anything can happen, really. Do you know what I mean? These are the two.
Not the easiest to start.
No, when you put it like into that perspective, yeah. You know what I mean. I was hopeful of the 3 points because No Eden Hazard, no Cahill. There's no Diego Costa. There was a few elements missing from that Chelsea team that were integral to them winning the title last year, which make them a stronger outfit. If you're going to get up for a game, it's going to be a weakened Chelsea. The beef between the two clubs in terms of there's a real competitive desire to win, get the 3 points. And I thought we saw that in the game. So, yeah, 3 points. Missed, in my opinion, even though Chelsea had as much right to win the game as we did. I thought it was a battle of the managers, and I thought Conte got it spot on. You know, he made sure that he had his big dogs in the middle of the park, force trotting to play down the sides with lesser artillery than they've had in the past.
Do you feel that was the first example of how you're going to miss Walker and less to 3 rows? He's still there, but are we seeing now what you've lost with Walker?
I think if you're talking about first and second in the league last year, putting out their best teams, yeah, that would always include Kyle Walker. Whether we miss him over the course of the season in the way that everybody's predicting, I'm not quite sure. He's definitely a great acquisition for Man City and has made them stronger. I'm confident Trippier will deliver. He's not going to do a Kyle Walker, but I think he'll deliver. So it's not going to be that much of an issue. It's more to do with the team getting to grips with how we play now that he's gone, who does what and all the rest of it. I don't think that we offered enough strength down the flanks to trouble Chelsea, a Chelsea team that if they put 8 men, 9 men in the middle of the park and tell them to park the bus, they can do that well. You know, so yeah, I think it was a chance to get 3 points, but no shame that we didn't.
And you mentioned there that you didn't have that maybe X factor, that player that could just unlock a door that Chelsea were kind of putting up. Ollie, our regular Spurs fan on the pod, he's been saying for the best part of a year, he feels you need that player, that someone, that Ozil, that Silva, that Fabregas, that can do something special as he comes in.
No, I'm going because I don't really think they unlock the games like what you're talking about. I know
the people X Factor that can just, you know what I mean?
Isn't that meant to be Eriksen?
Sir?
That's meant to be, isn't it?
Yeah, but he's not that player, and he's never going to be that player. He's a good player. But and maybe I don't rate him as high as some people do.
Yeah, a lot of Spurs fans rave about him.
I'm not one of them. I don't think he last season. Well, the back end of last season, he started playing well, in the way that people kind of got him as this, you know, talent, this lauded after. Even though I don't see no people coming in for a signature or nothing like that. It's a strange one with Eriksen, but I don't look at him as that clutch player that you're talking about. Do we need one? Not necessarily sure if we do. You know, not necessarily sure if we do. I think he's built off of team ethos, not one man. And I like that.
But aren't there certain games, like on Sunday, where you need that one man?
No.
A Hazard.
I hear what you say. But there's only about 5 of them. Yeah. And they're not coming to Spurs, well, the Spurs that hadn't qualified for the Champions League. Do you see what I mean? Listen, we keep it in perspective. The growth means that we'll attract that player maybe next year if we repeat the type of success we had last season. Okay. And maybe even do better.
All right. First of all, I think it was a really good football game. As a neutral, I thought it was a good game of football between two teams that defensively were good. And I think in a season we've seen a lot of the top teams not defend very well. My team and your team.
You've been watching Liverpool with it this season.
My team as well.
My team in the first game.
Yeah, exactly. I thought both teams... I always feel that with top teams when they play G... there should be more than 3 goals in the game. It should be 1-0, 1-1 or 2-1. It shouldn't be a bag of goals if you're 2 top teams, in my view. And it looked like it was quite a cat and mouse. I liked it. What did you make of the game and were you hopeful going into the game?
Well, first things first, I told you so. And I want that to be really clear and be on loud. I told you so. I told you.
Was
I
that
told
Josh. Rivaldo, or was
I told,
that,
I can, no, 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 no.
Or
no.
Did you genuinely no, no, believe no, no, you, we're you, going to beat Spurs?
It's Chelsea Spurs. Why would I not believe that?
Oh, no, listen, that whole thing's done now, Gabe.
No, it's not done.
No, it's done, Gabe.
It's done.
That don't matter no more. All of that stuff don't matter.
It matters, okay? It matters. So that's first thing first. I like the performance. It's one of those performances that you don't want your team to play like every week, because there was like, I think 15 minutes before the end of the first half, 15 minutes of it, start of the second half, where Tottenham were all over us and we didn't really have an answer to kind of get out. Mm. We defended well, but I'd like to see us have offered a bit more of a threat. And it's funny, it was only really when Tottenham took off Dyer for Son where it actually opened up some space for us to start looking dangerous again. But overall, I think before the game, there were a few things that like I didn't like. There was a lot of talk about us being written off, and I thought that was a bit premature. The Man United machine on Sky, on BBC, have been saying all this about Matic and how we needed Matic and all this kind of stuff. Let's get straight about Matic. Matic has been fading for a little while now, right? And towards the end of last season, he was actually being phased out in terms of Fabregas was getting ahead of him in the team, because what was happening was in that we couldn't unlock game. Like you were kind of talking about before, we couldn't unlock teams with him. And a lot of people are making out like Matic is going to be the answer to Man United's problems because he's a great defensive midfielder. But defensively, in this new era of football, I don't think he's that guy, because he's not mobile enough and people run past him. It's all really good against West Ham and Swansea. Mm. But get Dele Alli running at him and see what he does then. Mm. Get when you have to chase a game, see what he does then. Mm. But anyway, that's a side point. So but I liked Bakayoko and Luiz in the midfield, because
Luiz was an interesting move. It probably won the game.
It was probably the winning of the game in the end.
Yeah, you know?
Exactly. And I think it did what at White Hart Lane, what we struggled with last year is that we had Kante and Matic, but Matic was on the pitch, but he wasn't in the game, and Kante had to do everything against two men, and they were bullying them. But this year, we were able to get around them and close out their midfield, and then use that as a springboard to be able to break off.
Do you think they'd have played like that if you'd have had a full team starting 11?
I think we would have. I think he definitely still would have tried to flood the midfield. I don't know, and because I think it was obvious that your fullbacks were not going to be as effective, so let you have that space on the side. Probably not that same formation.
He would have probably played. Fabregas would have had that central role instead of Luiz.
I don't know about that.
If they'd have played three across the middle, he might have.
Yeah.
You know, Luiz done that job when you're under pressure. He's prepared to get a foot in, and that's not Fabregas's game. And it was that type of game actually that really suited the way you ended up setting up.
Yeah.
No, he knows Kante and Bakayoko were going to. They got the legs on them, innit? They were always going to do the dirty work, so Luiz can just, you know, coast about and be a physical presence, because it is a physical presence as well. Yeah. It's not just a case of him just, you know, breaking play up.
Yeah. No, but overall, always happy to beat Tottenham. Alonso.
I just don't know why, though. Why so happy?
Always happy to beat Tottenham.
They really hate you.
Yeah, but I don't know where it comes from
I don't know. Joel, did we see in that second goal that was scored by Chelsea, by Alonso, why Lloris is not elite? He's not in that elite group of goalkeepers, and I can see you kissing your teeth and turning.
So Jordan, he's one of the best goalkeepers in the world. I'm always going to say that. He's one of the best.
I don't think De Gea lets that goal in. I don't think Oblak lets that goal in. I don't think Neuer lets that goal in.
So they're the top three.
And it's a regular occurrence for Lloris.
It's not a regular occurrence.
Come on, he's got a gaff in
him. He has a rick in him.
Are you having a Tim Bath? Go and look at the stats on who was one of the best defensive teams in the league. Like, stats from Lloris, my friend.
You know what I will say is, last year, Lloris was turning my mind on whether he was elite, because I think he had a good year last year. Mm. The 2 years before that, every fifth game, he would do something and let in a stupid goal. He would let in a poor goal.
Sometimes against us. I don't know. I think that sometimes we overplay these things. You know, in the same way that Watford's goalkeeper, was it Gomez? His contribution to them last season was downplayed. But go and talk to a Watford fan. I'll tell you how integral he was to their success. You understand? But yet the stigma of him and what he did at Tottenham still follows him. And that's what people are trying to do.
He's had a few shockers.
I'm not saying he doesn't, but I'm saying what he does positively outweighs what he does negatively, but yet the stigma stays. And I'm saying with Hugo, that's what people are trying to do, like yourself. And I'm going to tell you, you just quoted the top three goalkeepers in the world, and he's in the conversation still. Mate, that was a gaffe. We'll put it behind him. Captain us to glory. We'll be all right.
Okay, all right.
I'll take him tomorrow. Spurs are selling. Spurs are selling. We're buying.
Stephen, do you think Alonso is becoming the best scorer of free kicks in the Prem? I think he scored a couple last year.
A couple. That was a great free kick.
It's a hell of a strike.
Yeah.
He doesn't often miss by a lot when he does take free
kicks. No, just in general play. When they signed him last season, maybe it was just me, but I couldn't believe that he he got a move to Chelsea. You know, haven't seen him previously at Bolton. He just didn't look up to that level. He's grown into a really, really good wing back. They were still talking about yesterday when I was watching the game that there's rumours talk behind the scenes at Chelsea that they still don't think he's the right man for the job. They're looking for someone else to replace him.
Well, it's funny because Conte said that he wants more goals out of him. Yet, I read another stat that said that there ain't no left back with more goals than him in as many games.
I thought...
So it's a strange one, isn't it?
And what you really want to see, what I thought was impressive, you know, there was that drive in the, you know, the 82nd minute or whatever it was to get forward, to get himself. Yeah. It wasn't when that play got broken up. The easy thing to do there was play out a 1-1. Yeah. I'll knock that back. We'll keep ball and calm it down for a couple of minutes. As soon as he picked that up, there was only one thing in his mind. He was going straight from, I know Lloris should have saved it and whatever, but you know, just for getting himself into that position, you get your rewards for getting yourself in there.
I think you've got to give him his props overall, because the whole summer we've been linked with Alexandro.
He must feel really bad.
And people have been saying that Conte almost wants to quit because he didn't get Alexandro. Yeah. Literally almost implying that. Yeah. So he's had to deal with that. He's performed really well. I look at our squad and I think, he's probably one of the smaller of us.
That's what I was going to say. That is the two fullback, the two wingback positions at Chelsea. That is the least of your problems when you look at the overall squad right now.
And a lot of people would have just sulked or like, you know, asked for a transfer or something. But he's came up and he's done the goods. And for me, I'd say stick with him. I don't think we never thought we particularly needed Alexandro. Mm-hmm. And I personally have kept Ake as his backup and let him play. Mm.
Do you think, in a really weird way, you winning on Sunday may backfire for Conte, because Roman now might say, see, you can do it, get on with it. In the same way last year, he didn't get the players that he wanted and he won the league. So Roman's thinking, well, you can do it with the players you've got. So what are you asking for more players for?
No, because it was far from the perfect performance. There was long periods of the game where we didn't have the ball, we couldn't hold the ball. The ball was just coming back in waves and waves and waves. I'm sure Roman isn't...
You're playing a good side, though.
We're playing Tottenham.
where do you... So when I looked at it, you know, when you're listening to the narrative of Chelsea are struggling, it's been a terrible summer, Conte's really not happy. Then I looked at the team yesterday and you had Bakayoko playing, Rudiger, a new signing, and Christensen, who had a really good game as well.
So
that's... three new players, like in any particular window, three good signings that go straight into your starting 11 is not bad going. You don't want to see a turnover of 8-9 players because it doesn't all bed in.
No.
So when I look at it, actually, when I watched it yesterday, I was kind of, actually, have Chelsea had that bad of a window? And where do you feel, apart from a replacement up top, where you also sign Morata? So actually, in your starting lineup yesterday, you had four new signings started a game yesterday. Mm. What... anything more than that almost feels excessive.
No, we.
What
we,
more does he want? Where do you need to strengthen? Where's the problem?
How bad our window has been has definitely been well overhyped, and I think that's probably partially down to Conte and, as I said, this Man United machine over this whole Matic transfer to make it look like as if Chelsea don't know what they're doing and Man United always do. I think the only thing where we were unlucky is Bakayoko being an injured. And Hazard being injured at the beginning of the season, because obviously, you know, if you're looking at Bakayoko's Matic replacement and you're looking at Hazard, they are.
So that gives you a pass then on the opening day, or an explanation for what's happened.
Yeah. But let me ask you, G, is your squad today stronger than it was this time last year?
No, it isn't. But then at the same time, we were always going to lose Costa, and that is the key area where we're not stronger. What I would say is that we last year we had a squad ready for just assault in the Premier League. Mm. We always needed to build in that squad, and it seems like, yes, as much as you say that we've brought in Rudiger and Christensen, with John Terry and Kurt Zouma have gone. So in that sense, for every player that we've brought for every player that we've brought in, we've let someone go. And we do need to. But I mean, if you look at that first team and you say it's okay, but you look at the bench and you've got like Tomori and Masunda, the bench is looking really, really light. And if we're going to play two games a week, we're going to need reinforcements.
And like the bab, you've got Fabregas and Hazard to come back into that. Gary Cahill come back into that squad. So that's three players that were also still missing from yesterday that will definitely get back into that starting starting 11. I don't think Chelsea are in, as you say, I think it was overhyped where the, your problems.
Yeah.
And actually now you're getting way too much credit for almost this miraculous turnaround yeah. against Spurs. It's not that miraculous.
But we had to play David Luiz in midfield.
No, true, that, but actually that was turned out, that maybe is his actual, that could be his position. He looked comfortable there.
He's played there before, hasn't he?
He's played there before. I don't think that's a long-term solution for him. I mean, he grew into it in the second half. I think there were some flaws in it in the first half. But yeah, we had to play a centre-back in midfield. So if you look at that, we had one midfielder suspended and we had no one else to come in. That's not looking
good. Then, like you're talking about up top, Costa being, you know, he wanted to go. Everyone knew he was going to go. So you brought in Morata. You can't really bring in another frontline striker. You paid 70 million for him. No. He's going to expect to be...
I don't think we should bring in another striker. I think we should give Morata a chance to develop and play in our way of football.
So wouldn't that leave you with two strikers then? Who's your third striker?
So no, it would. Yeah, but then...
Batshuayi, which was 35 million?
No, he's the second striker, isn't he?
Yeah, he's second striker.
Who's the third striker?
We play one man at top. So I think
but in four competitions, you're going with two strikers.
I think that will suffice, to be honest.
Really?
And if you think there's players like Pedro,
that's what we got.
All of a sudden, this is what I'm talking about. Chelsea are just chucking names out from. Oh yeah, we've also got Pedro. So yeah. It's this thing of like, you know, it comes across as like, oh, we've not really got any options, and it's really difficult, and we're fine, and we've got to buy all these players, and we've had a terrible window. The next thing, you start naming the squad.
On a sofa, and there's Pedro there.
Yeah, this guy just won like a couple of Champions Leagues with Barcelona. We'll just bring him in. He can do 20 minutes. He'll do a job for you on the left hand side.
Who's got more players? Is Arsenal or Chelsea?
We've got twice what they've got, I think. They've not got enough, maybe, but we've got too many.
I think that when I look at Chelsea, when I watched the scene yesterday, and actually players to come back in, Chelsea are in a lot better place than what.
Than what people are.
And I actually think Conte's playing slightly the game of maybe Benitez from what you asked me earlier. It's, you know, he wants to get his way. He wants to stamp his authority on the team. He wants to let Roman know that, you know, I'm the manager, and if I ask for players, I get them. So he's throwing his toys out of the pram, and he's threatening to maybe leave, and he's threatening to go back to Italy and all that kind of stuff. Actually, he's got pretty much everything he's wanted in the window.
Has he, though, to make an assault on Europe? Because that's what he's thinking. I've won the Prem, whatever. Now he's thinking, I want to make Chelsea. And for his own CV, because he's not done well in Europe.
No, never done well in Europe.
Right, so he's thinking, have I got the squad that's good enough to compete in the Prem and in Europe?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've seen reports today. I don't know how true they are. There's another four players that Chelsea apparently is going to be done before the summer's out. Kandreva's on the radar. I've seen the from Everton apparently is coming to.
Oh goodness! Well, Barkley.
Barkley is being touted up, and it's kind of, he's pushing for a move to Chelsea, and Chelsea are interested. So they've signed four players, and now they've been linked with another four players. I mean, I'm not sure what more the Chelsea board can do to satisfy a manager other than give him upwards of four players every single window.
Okay, all right. Let's move on to Spurs now. Unfortunately, do you agree, Joel, with Stephen's earlier assertion that you're going to struggle? The home form is going to ultimately be what holds you back from doing a thing this year.
I think you'd be naive to sit here and say that you move to a new ground, it doesn't affect you. You just, if we had a season like last season, it'd be a miracle.
It's already worse than it was last season.
Well, there you go. I think that loss will actually just get rid of all of that now. You know, like, there's no unbeaten form at home. There's none of that. It's a shame it had to happen at the hands of the blue lot. But it did. And they're the champions. It's a good start for them.
Yeah,
good start.
We always beat Tottenham, but, you know,
They don't always beat Tottenham anymore. But they have been quite, you know, going into, in terms of form at Wembley in 2017, they had better form than us. So, but no, I don't think the Wembley thing will be a hoodoo. Listen, I heard somebody quoting stats about we've won two games in 11 over the last 10 years since the new Wembley was formed, right? That's like 1.1 losses a year. I'll take that. That's the form we've got to go for the rest of the... I love that. So for me, it's not that deep. They've just got to get their head around the fact that, you know, the atmosphere is not going to come from that end of the stadium like it did. You know, the divot in the pitch
is the problem Not so much. I don't think it's going to be you're going to have an horrendous record there. Of course you're not. Spurs are a good side. Mm. They'll win games at Wembley the same as they won games at White Hart Lane. But a lot of your success last season, and you still finished second, was based on an unbeaten home record. Mm. So if you end up losing this season three games at home and draw a couple, all of a sudden your away record has got to be impeccable to get back to anywhere near the points level of last season. So even that two or three, four games drop off from what it has been for the last couple of years, because it's been formidable at White Hart Lane, all of a sudden that's, you're talking about struggling to get in the top four, never mind challenging to win the league, which you have been for the last couple of seasons.
That's assuming our win ratio is the same as last year across the board. You know, true, because we didn't start the season well. We did what we did the season before that, and we finished a place less. We finished right. So for me, I start to the last two seasons that's been the reason why we haven't end up closer to the eventual champions. Yeah. So I'm not really too worried. You know, if we win and or lose or draw a couple of games in the beginning, because we've shown the propensity to come good over the last couple of seasons. Obviously, if you're a manager, you don't want that. You want the team to hit the ground running, and that hasn't happened. Again, it's a London derby against the champions. They're both teams up for it. It was 2-1. It is a close game. You know what I mean?
I agree. That's what I think will be the issue, though, is you will get your Brightons, your Burnleys, your West Bromwich Albions. Forget the big games, the London derbies and your top four games. The smaller clubs that are already looking forward to playing the bigger club, and now they've got a day at Wembley.
Adding incentive.
That's where I just think it's an extra difficulty.
I think we're going to roll them over. I think those small clubs are going to get rolled over like last season. I really do. And I think that's the London derbies will be, again, for us, it will be the key area.
Well, again, I think the stadium thing has been well overhyped. And another thing that Sky tried to sell the game. I mean, it's FA Cup finals and semi-finals that you usually play at Wembley. So if your record ain't that good, first thing, you've had to play well to get to the semi-finals. Not that I want to defend Tottenham or anything, but you have to play well to get to the semi-finals. Yeah. And then there can only be one winner. It's not that deep if you haven't won it. And then they try to make it almost as if, like, if they didn't win yesterday, it will be bad at Wembley for the rest of the season. What if they go and win next week at Wembley? When everything's fine. So I think they made far too much a big deal.
It's a story game.
They wanted to get something on it.
I just think it's more nuanced than that. But I just think from the Spurs, if you're looking at the whole season as a whole, just because they've been so strong at home for a couple of seasons now, even a small drop off of that, and that is possible at Wembley because of the change.
Yeah, definitely.
That causes just as a knock on into points.
It throws a different dynamic into the mix, definitely. I like I said, it'd be naive to say, nah, it's going to be up.
Yeah, anyone saying the Spurs are going to lose 19 at home this season, that's also.
Let me come in. Is it true that there was some like speakers pumping in?
And plastic flags, Joel. Don't forget the plastic.
What's wrong with speakers pumping in music, fam?
Music.
What? No, like chanting and crowd noise.
And a drum for the crowd to get
behind.
Put
that one out there. Hold on a minute. Don't they do that at the London Stadium at the Athletics to make it sound like it's a great atmosphere?
Doesn't make it any more
acceptable. Yeah. I don't know if they need to do that.
I've had a couple of my mates burying their head today.
We play at Wembley. Hold on a minute. Have we got records at Wembley? Like, we have, innit? Like, we put the most bums on seats, so creating an atmosphere is not a problem. Let's have it right. Well, it's not, Jordan, is it? It's not. So if you're blue or you're red and you put that out there, poor you.
just finally, player wise, I think I know your answer to this one, but do you subscribe to the thought that Tottenham don't need to bring in three or four players and go crazy to fill out the squad this summer, and you would like to see continuity with what's there, cultivate what's there, or do you think that it's now time to freshen it up with a couple new men that can fill out the squad and really, you know, do a thing in Europe and the Premier League?
I think most people will tell you the same thing. Sign the right players. Don't just sign any players. Sign the right players. So we need another striker. That's obvious, because the geezer who plays understudy to Kane, he's not shown that he's good enough to carry the fight for us. So we need somebody who is. So we need another striker. They've signed Sanchez. We needed another defender. I hadn't seen much of him.
On Sanchez, I want to cut you there, Joel. Yeah. do you read what I read, that that is basically a prelude to Toby going next season? Because that's a lot of money to spend on a centre back in an area where you're probably strongest.
Especially we
just got 50 mil for a right back. So what I'm saying is, it's not a lot of money to spend on a centre back, is it?
So but it is, considering there's other areas of the pitch that you could spend 42 million.
Not on a 21 year old. See what I mean about the right players? Sign the right players. Now this is a 21 year old who could have 2-3 years development, and he's at the right club to do that. You know, now you're talking about Toby. What about Wimmer? He could be out the door soon. So if he is, then you do what they've done. You know, so it's good business for me, and that's what I want. I just want to see them sign the right players. I don't want to see them get too carried away with signing bodies for body's sake, because that's what we did with, you know, the Sissoko. And that didn't work out, and that was 30 mil. No one don't talk about no more. We talk about Alonso. That was what, 23 mil?
That 18, 19 mil.
No, it was 23. So what I'm saying, you can get,
knock off a couple of million.
It make it look even better. I was giving him props as well. You know what I'm saying? But you can get caught up signing the wrong players just because you feel like you need to sign someone. I just want to see my club sign the right players and keep the contract, keep the wages down, keep progressing in the right kind of way. And yeah, they'll be all right in the end, man. For us, it's top four again. That's the target. Finish top four, because it's 6-4 now, standard. That's what creates the competition, and we're in the mix.
Briefly, is that going to be enough, though, for the likes of Rose, Ali, Alderweireld?
In the end, it will take winning a league, progressing in the Champions League, punching way above our station, that we have done for the last couple of years, to keep them guys interested, in the end. And I've said this before, the test isn't so much... this team, we know this team could probably win a trophy, or, you know, if they get it together, we get a strike, and they could probably do something. This is for the manager. Remember, he's learning as well. I think I said this the last time I come up here. He has built a team. He's done well with young players. Now, how does he cope when this young team gets to that point where, like,
it's now or never.
Well, if we don't do it this year, I'm going to go do it where we can do it. Will he be given the time to build it again? Can he build it again? Is he interested in that? How many of the players go? These are all the things that I want to, all the questions that I got to be answered about the manager, let alone the players on the pitch.
Does the salary cap bother you as a Spurs fan?
No.
You said you want to keep the wages down. Yeah, but the only way to really, usually, your final, your position in the league is defined by how much you spend on salaries.
As long as that's met with success on the pitch. So don't just start paying people.
No, I agree.
So I take your point. You know what I mean?
If it was a Danny Rose, for example, who's saying, you know, I'm paid, what, 50, 60,000.
We can get another Danny Rose.
Really?
Yeah, we can get another Danny Rose. And we can build another Danny Rose.
And now Alderweireld.
That's a little bit more difficult.
That's what I mean. So you've got, like, probably the best centre-back in the league. He's saying, I'm not being paid. And he's stalled in his contract. He's pulled out of talks again.
Yeah. No, he's done the right thing to look after him. But we bought Sanchez. You know what I mean? So if Toby wants to look at the desire and where we're going and a club sticking to its principles, that's us.
That's that.
You know what I mean? So it's not like he won't get rewarded. I think the man, you know, Levy's come out and said if a player's done well, he rewards them.
Yeah.
You know, so okay. He could push the threshold in terms of wages. It probably won't be him, though. It'll probably be Harry Kane.
Let's move on now, guys. I want to bring in a Bournemouth supporter, Tom Latcham, who's also the Talk Sports host of the Extra Time show. Tom, how you doing, sir?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm better start of the season.
Yeah, it's not been the best start for you guys. Tell me a little bit about the transfers, first of all, of the guys that you've brought in to Bournemouth. Because on the preview pods we did leading into the season, the general consensus was amongst my guys that Bournemouth had probably the best transfer window of all the clubs. Would you agree? And what have you made of the signings you have seen so far?
I think the signings were good. I think Jermaine Defoe guarantees your goals. He's coming back to the club where he sort of started. He came on loan to us, of course, and played his first 10 league games with any club and scored 10 in his first 10 games. So he's coming back to the club that he did that. And as I say, he guarantees goals. He scored 15 in the last two seasons for Sunderland, and they were absolutely dire. So you would hope that he would guarantee you goals. He hasn't started either of the first two league games, which isn't totally unusual for Eddie Howe. He often does ease people in. He said he's not quite up to match fitness yet, and he will apparently start against Birmingham in the League Cup. And you've got Nathan Ake and Admin Begovic who were brought in from Chelsea. Ake is class. It seems strange to think that someone could be a bargain at £20 million, put in this sort of, in this climate, that's what you pay. And actually, as a full Dutch international, who can play anywhere along the back and potentially in defensive midfield, if Eddie Howe should be so bold, and we'll come on to it, I think he should be, I think he needs to be, he seems like a sort of a bargain at £20 million. And Begovic is definitely a step up from Arthur Boric. And just, I've been impressed with him. The way that he comes for balls, Boric doesn't do that. There was one example against Watford, he came for it across, got it, and then chucked the ball up the pitch and started an attack. Boric doesn't do that.
Okay.
Sorry, Tom. Stephen here, Tom. You say Defoe, it's not unusual. It's not that strange that he hasn't started yet. I don't know. If you're going to kind of bring him in as your kind of frontline goal scorer and then turn around 2 weeks into the season and say he's not quite match fit, what's been going on in pre-season that's the case? That doesn't seem quite right just from the outside.
No, you're right, and the answer is I don't know. He's quite loyal to Eddie Howe, to his players. Afobe last season, he did an alright job for us, and I think he wanted to go with Afobe and King, who played a lot towards the end of the last season together. And yes, he has been brought in as our main striker, but let's not forget that Josh King scored 16-17 goals last season.
True.
So to say he is our main striker, yes, you're probably right, he is, but to put him in straight away, it's sort of not Eddie Howe's style. I just feel that we're into the third season of Bournemouth in the Premier League now, and we still haven't managed as a side to move away from that core or evolve and develop that core, and that is really worrying. And every good thing in football, every good thing comes to an end, and it feels a bit like the Harry Arthur, Andrew Sermon midfield pairing is predictable, it's stale, it's been worked out by the opposition. I think it's quite easy to play Bournemouth at the moment, and that's my real worry. We've played two games, we've had, I'd have to double check the exact number of shots, but I think we've had three shots on target in two games. Oh, and those are games against West Brom, admittedly away, which is not, never easy. But we just never looked dangerous at all. And then against Watford, where we've always had good games against them, and they just nullified us. Mm. It's particularly worrying when you think that you've got to play Man City and Arsenal next. Mm. You're looking very much at four games, no points, potentially four or five shots on target, and that is, given how many goals we scored historically, and how we base our game on outscoring the opposition, is seriously worrying. And I do feel that we've become a bit too predictable. And this is why I'd like Eddie Howe to be bold now. He says it's his job not to panic. It's time not to panic. I bet you he is panicking. And if he is panicking, he should do something about it and be bold, whether he will or not. I don't know.
I was going to say, there seems like there's a bit of a vibe coming from, as a Bournemouth fan, that you're not entirely sure about Eddie Howe. You know, like, as outside people outside the club look at it and think he's doing a brilliant job there and he's a bright young manager for the future, but you seem to be intimating that it all is not well, and actually you'd prefer to see some changes within the club at the moment,
or even he's taking you as far as you think he possibly can.
No, absolutely not, and I wouldn't like to give that impression. Eddie Howe is why we are where we are. He's fantastic. I wouldn't want any other manager. I think as soon as he leaves, we will go down. That's certainly not what I'm saying. But nobody's perfect. And I do worry that there are flaws in Eddie Howe's thinking. I feel sometimes he shows too much loyalty to players, which is why we haven't perhaps moved on from that core. Which got us to where we are. He's got his favourites that are undroppable. There's something strange going on with Lewis Cook as well. I don't know what it is. He's the first English player to lift the World Cup since 1966 in the summer. They won the Under-20s World Cup. He's come back and he's not even on the bench. And Eddie Howe says he's fit. So I can't work out what's going on there. Then there's either something very odd going on there, or he doesn't seem to think he's up to it. Mm. Whereas last season, he played 5 games. He was injured for a lot of it, but he played sort of 4 games towards the end of the season. And his statistics, in terms of his key passes and his assists, were better than Andrew Sermon in 25 previous games.
Okay.
Here we are, back with Andrew Sermon, playing sideways, playing predictably. Where's Lewis Cook? He's not even on the bench. So that's what I mean. I think Eddie Howe is a Bournemouth legend. He always will be. I certainly don't want anybody else. But that doesn't mean that I don't sometimes question some of the things that he does.
You mentioned this is your third year in the Premier League now. Do you still consider yourselves, you know, a team that's not quite established yet, and it is basically for Bournemouth about still staying in the league? Or do you feel like now you are a Premier League club and you would be shocked if you did go down this summer, this season?
Well, I said before the season started, I did another podcast about Bournemouth, and I said that we would comfortably stay up. Having watched the first 2 games, I'm far less sure now. I think that in terms of the quality of the players that we've got, the quality of the squad we've got, there are 5 or 6 teams that are worse than us. But that's not to say that you can't. That's not to say that you're not going to go down, is it? You know, we are a small club. Everybody below Everton, pretty much, is at risk of going down if they have a bad season. That's just how it is. You know, and apart from the big spending top seven, everyone, if you have a bad season, you'll be at risk of going down. And that goes for Southampton, it goes for West Brom, it goes for all of us that were last season bunched around that sort of 9th, 10th, 11th place. I'd say Leicester don't look like they're likely to go down. They look like they've really, really kicked on and improved. But, you know, West Ham, they could go down. There's absolutely no reason why West Ham could go down. So to say, are Bournemouth an established Premier League club? No, not really. I mean, we have been a Premier League club for a few seasons, but are we at risk of going down? Of course we are. Everyone else, apart from the top 7, is, I think.
It'd be interesting to see, as you Joel, it would be interesting to see how they get on against City, because I think, just watching them as an outsider looking in, they always seem to raise their game against the bigger teams. And
I would point out at this juncture that Man City is the only side that we've never taken a point off in the Premier League.
Yeah, but I'm more pointing about the fact that they'll raise their game. It's just a shame it comes before the window and before the international break, because I think if those 2 games were back to back, irrespective of the result, because we probably expect Bournemouth to lose those games, I think they could have taken something from performance. And you know, it'll be interesting to see how they get on against those two, especially given they've lost the first 2 games.
Tom, one player I want to just finally pick out, Jordan Ibe. Now, he went there as a record transfer from Liverpool. What's happened? Because I thought it was a really good buy at the time for a decent-ish price. Stephen, our Liverpool fan here in front of me, is waving, saying no, which I'm assuming means that he got the better end of the deal there.
The Liverpool fan's right.
Really? What's happened to him? He's been a flop.
He's useless. He's not very good. I mean, he's not a very good player. He's not a very clever player. He's not a very smart player. So, you know that stat pop they do, like a sort of spider ground of players' outputs. Basically, Jordan Ibe, all he does, and he's done it throughout his Liverpool career, and he's continued it into his Bournemouth career, he basically does about 2 or 3 dribbles a game, and that's it. He basically does nothing else. I think he scored 1 Premier League goal in about 70 games. He scored 5 goals in the Championship, the Derby.
He flatters to deceive.
But in the Premier League, he's done nothing. He creates nothing. And he's got about 1 assist in that time as well. He basically looks nice.
Yeah.
He sort of dances around the ball a bit. And this season he came back and he has looked better. But just because he looks better doesn't mean he is any better. He still has 0 output. He makes the wrong decisions. He makes the wrong decisions at the wrong time. He looks nice. He looks fancy. But ultimately, what's the point if you're doing nothing with the ball after that? And in fact, some of his tricks on Saturday against Watford then put us in trouble, because he tried to pirouette on the ball on the halfway line and they picked it off him and they're running there on the attack. And I'm like, mate, what are you doing? Like, I get the impression that Jordan Ibe is not a particularly smart footballer. I don't think he's a smart footballer. I don't think he's a particularly smart guy. And you look at someone like Mark Pugh as an example of this, right? Mark Pugh, he's scored in all 5 divisions, four of which were with Bournemouth. He's come up with us. He's a very limited player in terms of his abilities. but he's very, very clever. He's got a very good, smart football brain. He knows his limitations. He knows when to do certain things and when not to do certain things. And he has flourished despite the fact that he's got nowhere near the potential in terms of skill set as someone like Jordan Ive. But Jordan Ive, you can have all the skills set in the world. If you do make the wrong decisions at the wrong time, your point is you may as well not be on the pitch. Now, maybe I'm judging him too quickly, too soon, and it could come back to bite me. And, you know, though, ultimately, when you're judging someone, that is a risk you take. But I would, he's shown nothing so far in his time at Bournemouth to suggest that he will live up to the potential that his skill set offers.
Budgie.
Tom, I was going to say, I mean, and I say this in the, well, in the nicest possible way, your stadium could be the worst in the Championship, never mind the worst in the Premiership.
Premier League.
And I know that there are plans or proposals to build a whole new stadium and a whole new training complex and stuff, which is all well and good. But like you said, alluded to earlier, you think there's a good chance that you could go down, well, with you and maybe 10 other clubs?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a good chance we could have gone down at any point.
Since we
came up, you know. Yeah. But at some point, you've got to make that step and say, right, we need to develop this thing. We want to develop it, we need to get a new one. And increase the amount of money coming through the door, both in ticket sales, but or more importantly, in terms of hospitality, which is where clubs make most of their money from the people through the door. But also, to develop the fan base. I've spoken quite a lot about this. I've written on this for The Sun. I've done podcasts on this. I speak about this on Talk Sport. It's crucial for Bournemouth as a club to get a bigger stadium. Now, we may go down, and if we went down this season, would it happen? Possibly not, I would have thought, which is why I hope we can get through this season. They'll start building, and whatever happens, we will have this brand new bigger stadium. Because at the moment, there are kids around town in Bournemouth shirts, playing football in Bournemouth shirts, walking around in Bournemouth shirts. They used to be wearing Man United shirts, they used to be wearing Liverpool shirts. Now Bournemouth's a Premier League club, they're wearing Bournemouth shirts. But the problem is, they're locked out of the ground. They can't go. There's no tickets. So they're supporting a club they're never going to get to see. Now, if we go back down, which as I've said, anybody apart from, you know, Everton upwards is at risk of going down, and at some point we will go down. That is true. We are a small club. It would be naive to think that we're not at some point going to go down. Of course we are. Of course we'll go down. They've been there for about 8, 9, 10 seasons. They'll go down. We've been there for about 8, 10 seasons. They'll go down. At some point, every team who's not the big six is going to go down. To suggest, you know, is naive, right? So let's be realistic. At some point, we probably will go down. But what's important if we go down is that we've got that we've allowed the fan base to be increased by allowing kids who are now wearing Bournemouth shirts
to see their team,
get into the ground, to get into the stadium, to see the Premier League side play. So if we get relegated, they'll still go. And then we've increased our fan base. Reading did a sort of similar thing. You know, they had the Majeski Stadium. They were about the same size club as us. Then they got the Majeski. Then they got promoted. All the kids from around the town can go and watch Reading. So now they go back down and they're in the Championship. They're still getting 12,000 when actually they used to average about 5 or 6. So they've increased their fan base by 100% on what they were originally. And that, for the future of Bournemouth, is crucial, which is why I've been pulling my hair out with us not seeming to be making plans to increase the capacity or to make a new stadium. So the news that they are making a new stadium, and it's just going to be just over the road, it's not going to be on a soulless bowl and a park and ride out of town. For me, that is bigger than any transfer that we've made this summer. It's vital. Whether it happens is another matter, but I tell you what, if it doesn't happen and we go back down and we fail to increase our fan base, then that is absolutely criminal by our board.
That's a good point. Just finally, and very briefly, if you could, Tom, what did you make of the incident between Chalobah and Harriata? I think it was on the weekend. Because I didn't realise that actually it's a foul to do what Harriata did. Were you there on Saturday, and when you watched it, did you?
Depends what he said.
You can't say leave it. I was like, what's going on? Why has he done that? And I was laughing at him. I was like, God, that was useless. And then I see what happened in the papers and on Match of the Day later on.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't Harry Arter a man who sarcastically applauds referees just after being booked? I mean, ungentlemanly conduct, yeah, I mean, shock.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Tom, listen up, all the best for the rest of the season. You're one of the teams that have come up in the last probably 5-6 years that I actually like watching. I do like Bournemouth. And I hope you stay, because I think you do contribute to the league. I think you made some good signings this summer. And you know, I do like the work that Eddie Howe's done since he's been in the Premier League. So I hope he turns it around, and I hope it's good times for you with Bournemouth. Just before you go, just let our listeners know the name and the time of your show, where they can check out your show.
Yeah, well, I hope we stay up as well, of course, because you know what? I mean, to be honest, I quite like the Championship. I wouldn't be complaining about being in the Championship. It was my best year supporting Bournemouth in the Championship. I began for 30, and those two were brilliant. It's not really a competition, is it, the Premier League? The Championship, at least, anyone could beat anyone. And I quite like playing it, you know, it's quite like being there. I hope we do too. I hope we stay up. But I'm having a baby soon, so I won't be going much this season. So it seems like, to be honest, having my things the first two games, I'm thinking, you know what, it's not the biggest, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to be checking out right at this point. Thank you very much. It's very kind of you to say. I mean, it's true. Imagine the Premier League was full of West Broms. That's what, you know what I mean? So,
amen to that.
If you want to listen to me, I will say, I'm sorry if I'm being a bit serious here. It's just been a bit of a rubbish start to the season.
keep the faith, Tom. Keep the faith.
It annoys me. But so it is lighter than this on my talk sport show. I do not. It's not me just ranting about Bournemouth. I do want to listen to it. Well, for the next few weeks, we're back pretty much Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night. Starting either 1 or midnight, I'm on pretty much for the next 4 weeks, almost three nights a weekend. So if you want to listen to me, that's it. Talk Sport. You can follow me on Twitter at the Boy Latch, but I warn you, it's all sort of anti-Brexit and anti-Jeremy Corbyn. But you know, if you like those things, then there's something for you.
Tom, thanks for joining us. Thank you very much for coming on, man. Take care.
All the best.
Cheers, mate.
Something that I've been interested in this season, and I was speaking to Gabriel about it just before we came on air, was the amount of players that have been agitating for moves away from their clubs. And I've never seen so many players trying to get out of their clubs in one particular summer. And I was thinking back to the Raheem situation a few years ago and how he dealt with trying to leave Liverpool. And it made me wonder, what is the best way of getting out of your club once you know in your head it's time to go? And we've seen different examples from different players about how to move away from your club. I'm going to bring in Darren Lewis from the Mirror here. Darren, what in your view is the best way ultimately to get a move from your club once you've established I don't want to be here anymore?
Well, there isn't an ideal way, because if you are a top player, everyone wants you to stay at that club. The manager knows that you can save his job. The teammates know that you can look better than you are. And the fans see you as an idol. And they kind of set their stall out by telling other people, you're going nowhere. Some people like me who write stories about those top players, you've got it wrong, our players are going nowhere. And yet we see time and again, those players end up leaving. And the fans end up unhappy, and invariably, managers tend to lose their jobs soon afterwards.
Steve, let me bring you in now. As a Liverpool fan, Coutinho's put in a transfer request. A couple of bids have come in from Barcelona. He clearly wants to leave Liverpool, but he's not. He doesn't seem to have been disruptive or aggressive with how he wants to move and leave your club. I compare that with Raheem Sterling a couple of years ago, who from memory was very aggressive that he wanted to leave. And correct me if I'm wrong here, I think at some point he said that he wouldn't play for Liverpool ever again. But he got his move. Coutinho potentially might not get his move. So does it matter how you put your request in and you go about it, as long as you get your way?
I think from the player's perspective, it depends how they want their legacy at that club to be remembered. So I think from you talk about Raheem Sterling, he's not liked at Liverpool. He comes back, he gets a tough time when he returns to the club now, and he probably doesn't care about that. So he took the stance that he was going to force a move through by whatever means necessary, if that meant going on strike. I think when you get a disruptive player within a dressing room, most clubs will kind of opt for the option of letting them go, because it's not worth the hassle and the kind of the problems they cause within the club. I think with Coutinho, I think we're probably going to go down the route of something similar to what happened with Suarez a few years ago, where really it looks like the deal has been teed up for next summer. The bids come in now. A lot of the work goes on behind the scenes. Someone has a word with Coutinho and his representatives, and something's worked out where he gives us one more season, brings us hopefully to the next level, maintain Champions League football, and then next season you part on kind of more amicable terms. As you see with Suarez, is kind of welcomed back to the club. He's been back for various events. There's still warmth there from the club towards Suarez. Sterling's a completely different situation. So I think it's along with what kind of Darren was talking about, how clubs don't want to let players go. I think players have to decide how they want them to be remembered at that club, and if they're prepared to kind of write off whatever they've done at that club for the previous however many years, they'll force a move through eventually.
Gabriel, you've got a situation at your club with Costa. Yep. What, in your view, you're a player, you want to leave.
Yep.
Do you take the aggressive and forceful approach, or is it more a patience but persistent approach that would be more effective for you if you were a player?
Yeah, Darren made a good point about it depends on the situation in the club, but I think 9 out of 10 times the aggressive situation is probably it's probably going to work. I guess it depends on whether you've got like an owner like Roman Abramovich who will stick to his guns and make you stay in the reserves if he really wants to.
But that's
to.
The thing, do you think because clubs in the league now have so much more, there's more money flowing around, that it looks like clubs are taking back a little bit of the power that they probably lost over the last few years, and they're willing to make players a bit like Arsenal with Sanchez. They'll leave you sitting there on the last year of your contract without too many worries about it, to be honest.
Yeah, they will, but it's the thing of, I mean, Chelsea wanted to get rid of Costa anyway. Like, I think we all know that. But no one wants a story in the paper week in, week out. And that's the thing where it just gets messy. And, you know, and in all honesty, apart from the Conte text message, I don't even think there's too much wrong that Chelsea have done in this occasion for once. But at the same time, it just makes the club look bad that it's going through another bit of turmoil, another problem with a player. It always just gives a bad impression. So you just want it closed off as quick as you can. If you can make the player shut up and go away, fine. But if a player's going to kick up a stink, then eventually you're going to move him on just to get the quiet and the bad feeling around the club gone. Mm.
Joel, do you think it matters? Do you think for players it really matters if their professionalism is questioned as long as they get their move? So Stephen mentions Raheem Sterling and how he left. Do you think players think to themselves, you know what, how I conduct myself and trying to move now will bear out later in my career? Or do you think at that point they don't really care what they've got to do? I want to move. I'll do whatever it takes.
Look, I think the first thing is Darren made a great point on it depends what club you're at, innit? Because if they've got the financial resources to put you in the reserves, then they will, or they can. I honestly think that it comes down to simple as this. The will that weakens first strengthens the other. It's as simple as that. So if the desire of the player is to leave, if Coutinho was to kick up a stink, I'm sure Klopp would put him on the bench and all the rest of it. But then they would have to have a meeting with his bosses and say, is that the best use of this resource that we could possibly, you know, exercise at this point in time? The answer would probably be no. And they'd sell him before the window. If he chose the Raheem Sterling route, I think the two have been treated very differently, and we'll see by the outcomes. You know, if one gets what they really, really want, it's putting a request, 8 months after signing a new contract? 5-year contract at that. So I understand the club protecting himself, but I genuinely think it comes down to the will that weakens first. In the case of Costa, he's wanted to go for ages. I don't know why it's taking so long.
Never went to be in the first place. Darren.
All right, George.
It's true. He didn't want to leave Madrid in the first place, from what I'm told. Never wanted to kind of be here. Darren, I've heard this line a couple of times, a few times in the last couple of weeks, in reference to Sanchez in particular, but also Coutinho, in that clubs and managers almost owe it to these players to give them their move. So it's like, oh, you can't deny Coutinho his dream move to Barcelona. You can't deny Sanchez his dream. You owe it to him. He's done well for you. And I don't know how you feel about that rhetoric, but my response to that is the clubs don't owe players anything. Just because a player wants to go to their dream club, that's not Liverpool's problem. That's not Arsenal's problem. They've got to look after themselves. Or do you think with a certain level of service, Arsenal do owe Sanchez that, okay, we've not won anything big
Chelsea did that with, if you look at Cech, I think he was there for such a long time, built up a kind of a reputation, a status with the fans and the club. They gave him his move. Yeah. He wanted to stay with it. They didn't stand in his way. It's very different when you're comparing it to Coutinho, who's just signed a 5-year contract on over 100
but
grand.
That's what I mean. So, Liverpool fans would say, oh, you can't deny him his dream move. Sorry, Liverpool fans.
Liverpool fans saying
you can't deny him his dream move to Barcelona, and I'm just like, yeah, you can. He belongs to Liverpool.
Yeah, I think it's based on case by case.
So, you know, it's an interesting point you make, because I would agree with you. And the reason why it's particularly interesting, people talk about you can't deny his dream move to Barcelona. Actually, right now, Barcelona isn't a dream move. And this is what I'm going to take over. Piqué the other day gave a really interesting interview after they'd been beaten, well, completely outmoded by Real Madrid. But Piqué said, in the 9 years I've been at this club, I've never felt further away from Real. Now, for my money, and this one, although it looks like he's going to be the transitional one, it doesn't look as though he's going to be the one. So you have to think to yourself, if you're Coutinho, is this right now a dream move? Now, I want to take you back 3 or 4 years to Luis Suarez when he was at Liverpool. And FSG said, we don't want to sell you. So now Arsenal has come in and bid the £40 million and £1 and then had a really good laugh behind the scenes. But basically, but they've made that bid, and FSG said, no, we're not going to let you go, you're going to stay here. And he did stay. That season, he scored 31 goals. Why? Because there was a major tournament at the end of it. And he managed to go with his country to that tournament, and of course not England out. And they ended his move to Barcelona. Now, at the time, obviously Barcelona was very big, very strong club, and it was part of that triumvirate with Neymar and Lionel Messi. Right now, is Barcelona a club that you can just untangle? I mean, they're in the market for Sterling. One of their interviewers kind of appealing for calm among the club's fans because they're concerned about the lack of signings in this summer's transfer window. I don't think Barcelona right now is a dream week. It might be in a year's time when Valverde's gone and someone else is coming to replace him, but I don't think they are a dream week right now. But to answer your question directly, do clubs owe it to players to let them go? No. This is a business. It's not a charity. In the same way that players, when they want to get their dream move, they don't owe their clubs anything. I don't agree with the whole idea that you want to worry about their legacy. I doubt Gareth Bale is that man who's worrying about how he left Spurs, in the last week of the summer transfer window back then, saying, look, if I don't get my move, I'm not playing for you guys again, which is what he did say. So I think as far as all that is concerned, players move on, clubs move on, it's a business. And I think in all of these cases, if these clubs get the money they want from the players, they will move on and they'll get something else in.
Joel, as a fan, how much do you read into how a player left their previous club who may be coming to your club? So in the example of, say, Van Dijk, he's put in a transfer request. By all accounts, from what I'm hearing, he's been a little bit difficult at Southampton. If it was your club that were the club that were linked with getting him, as a Spurs fan, do you think to yourself, do we want that kind of player? Could that happen to us in 2 years' time? Or do you just think to yourself, we're getting a really top player, I don't care?
No, I think if a player really wants to go somewhere, they should do what Van Dijk is doing.
That's the way. Make it happen.
That's the way. You don't wait. Why are you waiting? You could go and play next week and break your leg. No one wants you. You got to go for what's yours in your career.
By any means necessary, you get your move.
Do what you've got to do. You know what I mean? Because when a club doesn't want you anymore, they do what they want to do. You understand? So what Darren says is right. It's a business. There's no loyalty nowhere. I dropped that out years ago. Loyalty and all of that. Even that concept, it doesn't exist in football. And when clubs try to use it to keep a player, you soon see that they don't care when it comes to getting rid of a player. Do
you mind if I just cut go, 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 go. The people use this word loyalty about Danny Rose. I interviewed Danny Rose last November, and I was talking to him about, I was asking him how he felt with all the love that he'd been receiving at the time, because he'd established himself as the best left back in the Premier League. And he said to me, listen, I remember when Pochettino came into Spurs and he gave me a new contract. I'd been on loan at a couple of other clubs. Pochettino gave me a new contract. I was looking at the message board, and the Spurs fans are saying, why have you done that? He's not any good. So, when you turn around now and talk to Danny Rose about loyalty, you can see why Danny Rose isn't having it. You know, he's doing what is best for him. Because when the players, when fans don't fancy you and the clubs don't fancy you, they do what's right for them. I think Joel mentioned that, and I think he's absolutely right.
Yeah, Gabriel, do you think that the closing of the window, shutting before the season starts, could change or prevent any of the ruckus that's being caused, you know, that we've seen this summer, or would that just basically condense the circus that we've seen this last few weeks and months?
I'd like to see the window shut earlier, but I'd only like to see it shut earlier if it's a universal thing. So then there's no point. Because the window's really not shut. In fact, it might be worse for English teams if we shut it earlier, and then suddenly someone wants one of your players, and you can't do anything to replace them. So I think if we had a universal time that the season started, I don't know whether climates would allow that. But if we had a universal time where the season started, at least in Europe, I'm sure that's possible to do. And then we had the universal time that the window closed, that would be cool. But I'm just not sure, based on the current format, that it's going to give the outcome that we want.
It can work. Stephen, I was thinking today, contracts. Is there any point in contracts anymore? Because with the Neymar example, if what we're led to believe is true and he pretty much was allowed to buy out his own contract, some of these players, Van Dijk, Coutinho, have signed 4, 5, 6 year contracts, and 6 months, a year later, wanting to leave. Is there any point in signing contracts, or definitely long-term contracts, for players going forward? If a player wants to go, it looks like he's allowed to go.
Look, I think it gives the club probably a bit of protection. Liverpool can turn around to Coutinho now, and if we really want to suffer it out, he'll have to sit on the bench for 5 years. That's not going to happen, but that protection is there for the club if they really want it. Look, players are going to sign new contracts. So Darren was talking about Danny Rose. Spurs offer him a new contract for X amount of money next week. He'll sign it. That doesn't mean he doesn't want to move on to another club beyond that. It just gets him... He'll get his payday, rightfully so, for however long, whether it's 6, 1, 2 years, 6 months.
And, you know, on the subject of contracts, we've got Neymar with a buyout clause, and you've got Sanchez with no buyout clause. You've got Arsene Wenger, who's adopted a whole different attitude towards contracts and how he sees them. It got me thinking that actually a buyout clause is a hindrance now, because the fact that Liverpool don't have one with Coutinho is the reason why there's no negotiation going on beyond, no, we're not accepting their offer.
Barcelona actually acknowledged that themselves. They thought the deal would be a lot easier, but there wasn't a buyout clause,
they can't get to him. And so Liverpool are actually in a commanding position. So I think what we're seeing is an evolving in how clubs will negotiate. It's interesting because Chelsea do it one way. We know Daniel Levy does it a different way at Tottenham. He's already told everybody he gives rolling contracts. If you perform well, you get another contract in 8 months. You know, there's Arsene Wenger saying he don't mind seeing players in the last season. That was unheard of a decade ago. So there's this whole new way of approaching contracts and keeping players that's very interesting.
I think you'll see the buyout clause, which was a quite Spanish thing.
I agree with that. In very basic terms, contracts protect players in the clubs. If you're a player, you've got a 5-year contract, your form tells off or you get a bad injury, that contract protects you. That contract commits the club to ensuring that you get your wage paid for however long, rather than just cutting you loose with a huge amount of money that they want to get up their wage bill. Conversely, if you're under contract and a big club comes along, that player just can't walk out the door because they want to further their careers, and we're all ambitious. But, you know, if you sign a contract 5.5 years, you just mentioned with Coutinho, then that puts the club in a commanding position. I think Arsenal are in big trouble with Sanchez, because if the window closes and he has always moved to a Champions League club, he's going to be on the inside causing a little bit of disquiet.
Do you think he will do it?
But during this transfer, if he hasn't done a Van Dijk, as it will now be known, but I think if he doesn't get his move to a club that allows him to play Champions League football and Arsenal continuing to underachieve, I think he's going to be unhappy. At the end of next season, he's going to walk off into the sunset at £75 million asset to another club for free, and Arsenal are not going to be able to do anything about it. For me, that is lose-lose. And I think the best thing they could have done was got rid of him and use the money to get somebody else, and they still could do that. But in terms of contracts, yeah, I think you have to have them in football, because otherwise you have anarchy.
Just briefly on Sanchez, Darren, do you think on the 1st of September he will be there?
I still don't think so. I can't say it with any certainty, but I would still be staggered if Arsenal were prepared to take a massive financial hit on a player who doesn't want to be there anyway.
Interesting. I think it's interesting what just kind of what Joel point they made about what Wenger said. Stephen, do you think that Wenger is onto something and maybe he's seeing what the future holds, or was he just using this as a convenient excuse for what's happening and the mess that he's caused at Arsenal, and in particular with Alexis Sanchez? Do you think in a few years' time we will see players running down their contracts and leaving for free and cleaning up on the signing on fee and a big contract, or do you think he's just saying that as a bit of a kind of to hide the mess that he's made with Sanchez?
I think he's covering his own back. I mean, it's an appalling financial decision from a club, as Darren said, to write off a £75 million asset. You wouldn't hear it in any other business model. Arsenal pride themselves on running as a very well-run business as well as a football club. So from that perspective, yeah, it's an awful decision. There has been rumours of, different bits and pieces from listening around, that agents are involved in a lot of these deals now, and they're actually quite happy, as you say, to run contracts down, because they're actually then the transfer to move to another club is a lot more straightforward because there isn't a big transfer fee involved. That's a good thing for agents if that's the case, because there's more money going into their pocket off of the back of a signing on fee. But I think purely on the Sanchez thing from Arsenal's perspective, I don't think Wenger was thinking long term on this is how things are going to be down the line.
Arsenal got 33 players. 33. That's a madness.
Yeah, I think two went out on loan today. I think Jenkinson and a couple went out on loan today. But yeah, it's a really big squad. Just finally, Darren, do you think that Coutinho, Van Dijk will both be at their clubs come the end of the window?
Well, Coutinho, kind of fallen foul by side by being so strong in it, but you probably may have heard, but I've been out in the Far East with Liverpool. I know privately and publicly their position is very consistent. They don't want to sell him. There isn't an amount of money they were selling for. I think as far as they're concerned, it's about the principle of making a statement. They don't want to be seen as the selling club anymore. A colleague of mine, was together with myself, spoke to Jurgen Klopp in Hong Kong, and he said to us, look, I wasn't here when Sterling was sold, I wasn't here when Suarez was sold, but I'm here now, and I'm telling you now, Coutinho will not be sold. He must have given 10 interviews where he said the same thing. And then they backed him, FSG, with that statement when he came back to England and said he will be here on September the 1st. That's a very different statement from the negotiating position we normally see, where clubs, managers say, you know what, he's not for sale, and that's a euphemism for the other club hasn't paid enough money yet. Liverpool don't want to sell Coutinho. I think he will stay, and if he's there beyond the end of the transfer window, people say you're going to have an unhappy player. I don't think so. He's got a World Cup to prepare for, a squad to get into. How long can he sit on the bench before he says to himself, you know what, I need to do the business? If he does the business, he'll get the move he wants next year. But as far as Liverpool are concerned, I think the chat's made the point, Liverpool are in a very strong position with this. And I think it's very different to some of the other clubs. Van Dijk's got no interest in playing for Southampton, and I don't think that is a similar situation. I think he is going to be an unhappy player making a full problems, but I think as far as Coutinho is concerned, he will stay and Liverpool won't sell it.
And just finally, Gabriel, just last point. I mean, on the pod last season, I was making the point that when it was rumoured that Hazard was definitely leaving, De Gea would definitely go, we're going to lose a couple of big superstars from our league. And I made the point that I want to see some of the big clubs say no to Real Madrid and Barcelona and put their foot down and not just always, just give in so easily when these top clubs come in. Do you think now that clubs now need to start saying to these players, look, you're not going anywhere and we've got the money to make you rot in the reserves, if only to show the players and the foreign clubs that, look, you can't just come over here every summer and pick our best players. And to the players, every time you get a bit unhappy, you can't just decide you want to leave. Do they need to start making a stand against these players and saying, we'll take a hit on you, you're going nowhere?
Well, George, last season when you did mention it, I didn't particularly agree with you. Reason being is because I think it's a bit hypocritical for Man United or Chelsea to be like that when they probably do the same to a lower club in our same division. Mm-hmm. But what we have been talking about, what I'm seeing, it's kind of this kind of behind the scenes seem to be European alliance. Whereas if an English club comes in, the price is 70 million. But then between Juventus and Barcelona or something, it's 20 million between themselves. It just seems, I look at the Matuidi deal and I thought, how the hell has that happened?
Hilarious.
I looked at the Bonucci deal. I know that we got quoted like 50, 60 million from the beginning of the season. I mean, is that 30 million now? There seems to be some kind of a gentleman's agreement between them. And based on that, I went into everyone to band together.
I'd say no.
I tell you, the other guy, I said it and I got shut down. But I'm going to say it again. I would say every Premier League club give Liverpool £5 million each so they get the same money for Coutinho, but keep him. And keep him out of Barcelona's head.
Sold.
What a deal.
Are we just earning off the Sigurdsson deal so you can have it?
indeed. It's going to be, I think, a frantic final few days and week and a half, whatever it is, before the window closes. Darren, thank you very much for coming on the FFP, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for your time, Darren, mate. Take care.
Stephen, G, Joel, thank you very much all for coming on the FFP this week. Once again, top-notch stuff from all of you guys. And all of you guys out there, please, if you are not already on iTunes, subscribed to the FFP, please do so. Now, please, once you get on to iTunes, it really makes a difference if you can rate us and leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. Ideally, you say something nice about the pod and how much you love listening to the podcast. All the comments and the ratings make a difference. We want to really, really get this pod continuing its progression already. We are now on Instagram, so let's help us build that up as well. Follow us on there. Tag a friend who you know is football crazy. We are also now on Facebook, so like us on Facebook. And again, tag a friend who's footy crazy. Leave us a comment, a message, a question, a reply, anything, a response that I can put to the guys on the Football Fans Podcast. And of course, we are on Twitter, FFP_11. Until next week, peace.